Okay, now we're going to the financiers. Who helped Hitler?
I was wondering about Hitler, and I haven't got that far in your book, or I'm not even sure if you mentioned Hitler in there, but I wonder, did the bankers play a role in his rise?
The interesting thing is, not only did Wall Street play a significant role in bankrolling the Nazi Party in some of its election campaigns, but the interesting thing is that Hitler, once he took power, turned on those backers, because very quickly he made the connection. Nazi Germany is an interesting state in this regard, to make the connection between open system physics and open system finance. Because, of course, they did establish those departments of the SS to investigate so-called zero-point energy. And at the same time, nearly the same time that they did that, Hitler had the state itself issue what were called labor treasury certificates. And these things essentially circulated like money inside of Nazi Germany. But because they were issued by the state, they were essentially debt-free. So he entirely bypassed the Reichsbank and went back to a state-issued monetary system. So in a certain sense, you know, I'm not trying to justify the crimes of the Nazi regime by any stretch of the imagination, but in a certain sense, at this point, the bankers had to take Germany out, because if that doctrine had spread to other countries, of course, there would have been prosperity galore, and they would not have ended up at the top of the heap. I mean, my word. Right now, you know, 10 years ago, there was approximately something like 17% of the wealth of the country was in the hands of the bankers. Now, it's almost 60%. Once Hitler had made this decision and put Germany back on the track to state-issued money, what did you have happen? You had the call for international boycotts and so on and so forth, and of course, there was certainly moral reason to do that with the persecution of the Jews. But the other reason that they did it was, of course, to try and inhibit Germany's international trade. Well, that didn't work too well, because what the Nazis then did is they shifted to a system of international barter, and particularly did that inside of Eastern Europe. So they kind of did an end run around the attempt of the bankers to put Germany back on the ropes.
Okay, Ion. There are lots of books on the Wall Street houses. I think it's Brown Harriman and Solomon Cromwell that the Bush family is identified with. They're considered the Wall Street bankers, investors who helped Hitler come into power. Do you agree with that scenario?
No, not so much. I mean, it's just, it becomes a conspiracy of propaganda, might as well blame it on Gandhi.
So who helped Hitler, or it was not a matter of being helped on Hitler's case?
Not a matter of being helped. He came into his power. Nobody gave it to him. He came into his power.
Well, McLuhan said that he's an icon of the radio era. What was coming to his power was that he was able to use the electric public address systems and radio.
All he had to do was scream a whole lot. Everybody went, yay, 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 and there he was. Well, he's confusing the Eastern Bloc with Nazi Germany and how that whole process, he's using that as a hysterical reference. But if you come right back down to it, that they certainly should have been embargoed because of what they did to the Jews. Well, if you start coming right back down to it, if you come into your place of power, they weren't very good at it because they didn't get them all.
Right. And
in that case, everybody's not blonde-headed and blue-eyed for the genocide or the re-genetic code that they were going to work out. And they're laying all this in as if some little goofy Hitler, Adolf Hitler, came along here and took over everything. No, he filled a void. He was wild. He just took his place, and they said, hey, let's use him. He speaks well. He can talk good. So put him on there. Let him see what he's got to say. I'm hobbing, he's hobbing. Nobody knows. Nobody cares. It's all good. And everybody else is running up saying, hey, if this goes south, we'll just pin him. You know, let's do it this way, because we got bigger fish to fry, and we're zero, zero technology running this, and we're doing that. And it's those space Jews that helped us all out anyway, and we belong to the psychics, and we've got our Ouija boards. And
before we go to that, when you say they said, well, let's use Hitler, who's the they? That
whatever, whatever your person is talking about, making all these dramatic...
No. The way you say they said, okay, Hitler, you can talk, put him on. The they would be the captains of industry?
The oligarchy.
Right, and that's an interesting point. Who is the oligarchy in Germany?
Some say it's Deutsche Bank.
Some say it's Turin Taxis, T-H-U-R-N-U-N-E.
Well, and where do they land? At Deutsche Bank.
Okay. There are a couple of books on the thousand-year plan of the German, maybe Slavic oligarchy. Are German Slavs? Germans are Slavs, right? Or is that East Bloc? See, why did you say East Bloc? What, he's confusing East Bloc with what?
He's not mentioning, he's talking about the Eastern Bloc, and that's what they built the wall, dividing it from Nazi Germany, but everything that was coming out of Nazi Germany was from the East Bloc.
Yeah, during the war and before the war.
And after the war.
Was from the East Bloc.
Of course.
You mean to escape Moscow?
Of course.
Okay. So, well, that's what the America, that's why the Project Paperclip was adopted.
Exactly. And it wasn't because of Prussia. It was because of those awful little bitty Austrians that was running these backdoor banking campaigns that was turning out church all over the world. But them Ethiopians didn't care. It didn't bother them. It didn't affect their economy. They was all right. And then that was before they got well-versed in the Internet. So there you go. Yeah, and what's so fun about that Aryan world is that the Germans weren't even Aryan. They were trying to improve their own selves. Aryan is what they called the super race that they were trying to genetically instill by having blonde hair, blue eyes, fair skinned, and a great big old buck.
Okay, so what are the Germans? Racially.
Well, they're a mixture. That's
Germanic?
Well, no, it's due to a great deal of miscegenation. It's the miscegenation that got them crossed up that they decided, hey, we're going south quick here, boys. We better start getting the mares and the studs in the right ones in the right corral so we can get something to work with here. Because what we got right here working with us now ain't working, and we don't want any of the Hebrew blood tangled up in here because they're real good with money, so we can't have that. So isn't it funny that then you'd pull back in and have the Rothschilds, the Chateau Lafitte, coming back in here and having very, 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 very Jewish roots to then be the financier? So now you're saying that the David Rothschild and his predecessors from Chateau Lafitte are who was responsible for Auschwitz and the termination or the genocide of the Jewish population? Well, that's pretty intriguing. That's about the... Hey, this starts to sound familiar. It's the same thing that happened to Jesus. He was a Jew, and he was crucified by whom? The Sanhedrin. So maybe there must be something to that. So maybe it wasn't the jaws of the Third Reich and the German Empire that genocided the Jews. It was the Jews. It wasn't the jaws of the Third Reich. It was the Jews that did it.
Okay, and then if you bring in some Ionic principles, the Jews created this fate.
They did, and they're still talking about it.
Yeah, and where did they get their sense of lack, sense of less than, to think that they...
They were a people who were not. They didn't even have a country, Bob.
Mm.
They were a people who were not.
So as people in the early part of the 20th century start getting their countries, nationalism rising around the world, thanks to Garibaldi and those people in the 19th century, then the Jews start having an identity crisis, feeling less than because they didn't have a country. Would that be a factor?
Of course.
Interesting.
Because they were more German than they were Jewish.
And then it gets hyper when you have radio broadcasting everybody's national image all over the world.
I mean, hell, even the Canadians got a place to go home to. Nobody notices or cares, but they do have a place to go. They can send you back somewhere.
Okay, let's carry on with Joseph Farrell.
Without getting too far ahead of us, tell me about this Chinese guy, Henry Lee, who developed this. He sort of put it all down in a formula that lays it on out.
Well, yeah, Lee, I think his name was David, actually. David Lee was a Chinese mathematician that worked for the Canadian Imperial Bank of Commerce. And he is, if we're to blame the financial meltdown on one single individual, it would have to be this guy. Because he came up with what's called a Gaussian copula formula, which is a statistical formula, that attempted to correlate all sorts of different financial and economic activity into one number, okay? And we're talking here about a formula that's designed to coordinate thousands of interlocked moving parts in an economy. Now, the interesting thing to me, George, is when he came up with this formula, he completely dispensed with any sort of historical data for what he was trying to do and said, well, we can just base this all on market prices to derive the number by which we're going to rate bundles of securities and debt swaps. So, in other words, he's tossed any sort of historical data right out the window. And, of course, once he came up with this formula, you had the Wall Street and London banks just jump on it like, you know, for all they were worth. And they started creating not only bundles of credit swaps and default swaps, but they started creating bundles of bundles. And so they simply ended up inflating dramatically the amount of debt in circulation. And if the market, for whatever reason, for whatever historical reason, would suddenly turn, then of course that bubble would burst, and that's exactly what we see happen.
Okay, we'll come to that point. Ion, do you agree that David Lee's formula was influential
looks like the work of a marvelous human creator to us.
Right, so he created and encouraged the irrational exuberance.
But he didn't create that, Bob. We told you back when people was borrowing money on cars, and if you paid $10,000 for the car and you pay back $12,000, you created $2,000 in money that didn't go through the government.
Right.
Increased M1 by that contract. He didn't make it up, Bob. He just tried to get away so Milliken can get beyond his junk bonds.
So Michael Milliken, the characters associated with his arrogant, irrational exuberance, that's in the 80s. He gets in trouble in the 80s. You're saying by the 90s they had to continue the Milliken formula without Milliken being tagged to it. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Then you got Enron, who's borrowing money and buying stock and calling it profits on the stock when it was income that should have been processed backward till it all came raging down. Are you going to blame that on Lee, too?
So why what's interesting is why would the David Lee guy be agreed upon by the trend makers that he was the character? Is it just the need to look for one individual, or is there something, a bonus formula that was sexy?
It was money for nothing and the chicks were free. We can bundle this. We can take all this bad paper and bundle it together, rate it, discount it, and sell it. And then we've got our money back that we can loan, make more paper, that we can make mortgages. Because all those bundlings with the people who were making money was the ones that were filling out the URLAs. It was the originators. It was the worthless backed comps that were building these derivatives that were running themselves. And they turn it and turn it and turn it and turn it and turn it. Then you had people running around, Bob, buying property in the desert, paying $100,000 an acre for desert, didn't even have water, couldn't get the water if you drilled to China, and then paying $100,000 an acre for this worthless sand and buying it, and before it even closed in escrow, it would have gone up $100,000 because everybody was paying $200,000 one day later because of this run. Then they were taking and getting a HELOC on their property, pulling the $100,000 out. Then before they ever even paid for it, they've made $100,000. Then they close it. Then they turn right around and sell it for $150,000 more. Then they kind of roll and roll and roll, and then they leverage that property of the increase of their HELOC. And what do they do with it? They go buy another acre. So it's the, in this bundling process is where all this increase of monies came from. So people could run around and buy and buy and buy. Well, supply and demand, comps is what sets what property values are worth, thank goodness. So now these great big Mac mansions that cost several million dollars, you can pick up for $1.98.
Yeah, and that excessive trade is what pissed off Deutsche Bank,
mm-hmm.
as it affected them.
Of course.
Right. So
we're going to get held holding the book.
Right. So David Lee, was he surprised at the use of his formula?
That's
Did
what
he understand?
To do, yeah. But Bob, it's not that difficult. Bob, it's not that difficult. I will if you will. You will if I will. We'll bundle it together, and these will be the points that we'll discount to sell and rotate it again. And then when we discount this paper, we get our money back, and then we can sell it again because we're making our money on the origination fee of creating the paper, not on the buying and selling and holding of the security. The security is no different than holding them than Benjamins that Ed's stuffing in his sofa. You may prefer Michael Milliken bonds over them Benjamins that he's holding. After a little while, and then somebody will say, wait a minute, it's Benjamin Franklin's fault. His picture's on that note, and it ain't worth nothing, and it was. And I held these on account because this was supposed to be the increase, and this is a dollar, and it's supposed to be worth $100, and rah, 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 rah. You could just as easily blame it on Benjamin Franklin.
So David Lee, I read a year or so ago, he's now in China. Is that the right place to go with his success? Was he a communist and destroyed the American economy?
Nah, not so much.
Okay, was he was not surprised at the use of his formula?
Well, see, they come up with all kinds of crap. They come up, guess what? They ought to blame the one that come up with the in-store charge plates. People got food that they eat a month ago, and they've long digested that they don't even own. They got shoes in their closet they hadn't paid for. And that's where your issue comes. How can you have a pair of shoes you don't own? Well, put it on your plate. Put it on the revolving. We'll settle it out later. It won't be a problem. They'll have to sue us, and they'll get a default judgment, but it won't make much difference because ain't no money, and they run it, so they run it, and they got bailed out, and we not getting bailed out, so screw them. We ain't going to take their calls when they call saying, you owe me money checks.
Okay, there we go.
From what I've seen and read the Chinese government saying lately, I don't think they're too keen on accepting worthless paper dollars. In other words, they want dollars that represent actual production. Now that, and I think that's almost the exact words that they have used. And to me, that's a very, very interesting signal, George, because if we look at China's money, the yuan, we're looking at state-issued money. In other words, there's no Rothschild, Rockefeller private bank issuing monetized debt as the Chinese currency. Their currency is debt-free. The only problem that the Chinese have is that they have deliberately in the past pegged the value of their currency unit to the dollar. So what they're signaling, I think, is very subtly but very directly, they're signaling to the North American, Anglo-American banking elite that we want real money, not worthless monetized debt.
Okay. When Deutsche Bank made that decision in 2006, we want real money, Did China go along with that, with Deutsche Bank? Did they agree?
No. In the depegging of the yuan against the U.S. dollar happened when they stopped doing oil for U.S. dollars. And the basket got increased and got large because it is primarily still pegged against the dollar. But they just increased their basket of currencies that it's pegged so they had a larger hedge. But don't forget, they're the ones holding more U.S. dollars than anyone in the U.S. is.
Right, so global pressures force them to depeg a little bit, but that's just a temporary ache. They're gonna move and watch the euro eventually collapse and then be back with their dollar.
And strong as can be.
Right, so the Chinese government, therefore, weren't in a position in 2006 to bite the bullet like Deutsche Bank.
But you're talking about three different things. You're talking about the people of China, you're talking
right.
about the government of China, and then you're talking about the bank and the monetary system of China, which is Maybank, done through Standard Charter. And you can say it any way you want to, but that's where it comes back to. If it doesn't go through Maybank, it isn't.
Right, so the people who are pegged to the dollar in China are the banking people that you just mentioned,
mm-hmm.
who represent the Chinese people, not
right.
the government.
Exactly, because they don't care. Maybank doesn't care. They're doing those electronic transfers in Kuala Lumpur day and night, night and day. Autumn leaves, let it flow. And they're making percentages off every one of those electronic transfers, which has nothing to do with money.
Right, so he's focused. Joseph Farrell's talking about the Chinese government relationship to money, the
right.
global money system, and that's not the right place to look.
It has nothing to do with anything. They can't even they're building roads that don't go nowhere. They're starting great big building projects, and they build a 20-mile stretch of road that doesn't go anywhere. It just goes to big 4-lane, 6-lane, 8-lane highways. They go to some mall that they're going to build, they'll get the frame up and don't even finish it. Okay, well, that's your government work project. We've got a beautiful road that don't go nowhere. It's beautiful. Now we have to allocate the budget to keep the road up that nobody's using because it doesn't go anywhere.
Right, and the American government could be accused of trying to go that way, but they can't even get anything going because they have nothing.
Well,
you know, they're one step further back than the Chinese government. They can't even make a road to go nowhere? Would you agree with
correct.
That?
Correct, but at least the road in China that the government's built, they own it.
Okay. We own this useless road.
This road don't go anywhere, but we own it. America can't say that. We got roads that go everywhere, and we don't own them.
Right, so when we're talking, you know, when someone like Chris Story talks about China, he's not making this. Well, he does actually bring up what he calls the Chinese elders or the Chinese oligarchs or something.
Well, that's all his old Leo wanta business. So
yeah, but you got to be careful talking about China about the difference between the Chinese government, which is just hanging on, and the actual Chinese economy, which is something else, which you call the Chinese people.
Exactly. There's a night and day.
All right, so if Joseph Farrell's talking about the Chinese government, that's not accurate.
Exactly.
Now, if you're saying to depeg the dollar, you mean the Chinese financial establishment, not the Chinese government.
Exactly.
Right. So let's see what else he says.
If the scenario you describe is true, that mm-hmm. it would necessarily fall to them that any such groups, you know, if they exist, this international cabal would have to extend control over other sources of power.
Yeah, see, that's how you keep the economy going. You keep and the American economy by writing and talking about an American cabal or an international cabal.
Well, no, I thought it was as long as you say if in front of every statement or every other word, that's how your point across.
Yeah.
If
you have
this is that, and if this is that, if this can be that, then if that's this, and if that can that, and the ifs, the major speech. Hey, why don't they peg the yuan to the if, and then you got it for you.
Okay, good.
Education, media, things of that sort.
Yeah.
Talk about that for a couple of minutes. Like what?
Well, I think if we go back to ancient times and their manipulations of religion was the principal creator of public opinion back in those days. And if we use that as a kind of a template now, what we see has happened in the last 100 or so years is as these banks make loans to major media organs and outlets, they insist as part of the collateralization of those loans that they get stock in return, and that means that they usually end up being on the boards of directors of these media companies. So in effect, what you have is an interlock between the banks, the major corporations, and the major media, and that certainly spells an attempt to create a climate of opinion and steer opinion in a certain direction. I mean, my word, just look at how Congressman Ron Paul, when he was running for president in the last election cycle, was almost shut completely out of any real debate, and his views were not given that much play in the public corporate media.
And how would this manifest itself in academia?
In academia, that's a very different question. I think what you look at there and have to look at there are two different things, the sources of government grant funding on the one hand, and the source of private funding that comes from places like the Rockefeller Foundation and so on and so forth. Because what they're doing when they fund these projects is they're ensuring that scientists more or less stay on the reservation. In other words, that they do not go outside of approved models of physics or biology or genetics or what have you and start thinking outside the box. That's the way they control the climate of opinion in the sciences, absolutely.
Okay, Ian, do you have a comment on the Rockefeller Foundations, those kind of foundations, controlling the direction of science or educational content?
Do you know that? How we feel about science.
Right, you don't think they have much impact.
Science does is all you get with science is what they can't disprove. So put them
But that's the ideological point. But there is a lot of funding goes to labs through these foundations.
Where they're getting this funding from? He just said there ain't no more money and everything's bubble.
Well, that's now. That's now. But over the last 100 years, many people say the Ford Foundation influenced public opinion, made them stupid, so they weren't ready for the chip body collapse.
So the chip body collapse. That's why your Ford stock is so pricey these days.
Yes. Okay. So the point is, I'm just asking you, but what do you think of academia's control over?
We'd like to know the latitude and longitude of this place called academia.
That's more important than anything. The latitude.
Then you could move to academia and live happily ever after.
Okay, so I think many people understand universities having bankers and corporations on the university's board, and they think that influences the alcoholic students.
Oh, well, at least at Berkeley it does.
So what about his idea that in order for banks to give loans to media companies, they
sit on the boards?
Well, yeah, as part of the collateral of the stock.
Well, that's an old school. That's not new. But first of all, if you're sitting on the board, you can't get loans, nor have anything to do with the swaying of those loans. If you have a Reg D within the system, you can't have anything to do. Matter of fact, you have to step away from a vote if you have any way or say into the the oligarchy that is because of your conflict of interest. It'd be like, well, it would be about, it doesn't work that way. And so if you're going to use that as the dynamic, then you're going to say, well, these universities, these university schools of higher learning, then they're only going to teach a certain kind of way to get a certain kind of people. And then those that can't and don't, won't. Isn't that about the way they're talking about Auschwitz not too many minutes ago? What he's saying doesn't connect. You can't say that because this media mogul is in charge of the bank, then they get to control it. So that means some media company is sitting big on some bank, then Bank of America only gets the best commercials.
Oh, well, it was backwards of that. He was saying that the media companies needed a loan, and the banks demanded as part of the terms of the loan that they would get stock in the media company, and that would allow them to sit on the board and set the direction of the media company.
Well, that's not the case. Ask Ted Turner about that. He'll tell you that doesn't serve you well.
And in the, you know, after World War II, you could create your own Bible college, and you got all these Bible universities, and then you have the regular university. So everybody's got a lot of choice in America up
then
to this point.
If you want to how to learn how to roll a fatty, you go to Baylor.
Yeah, yeah. So but it's different now. America is got the grips on it, or a lot of people have thought themselves into that position. And one thing mentioned
that's
back
right.
There,
you can get your PhD now and get you a first-rate job flipping hamburgers at McDonald's.
He mentioned that the Nazis were into zero-point energy. Did you see that, Ion?
Yeah.
Was that happening back then?
Yeah. Happened long before that, but that's not a big deal. That's old school.
Right, and those Project Paperclip scientists brought that knowledge from the Third Reich into the Pentagon.
That's correct. How do you think they got the plans in the C-5? That lumbering behemoth couldn't fly without that technology.
When was the C-5 developed? I don't know that.
80s.
Okay. And then a lot of that secret stuff that brought over with the German scientists was deposited not in Area 51, but where, Ion?
Here and there.
Yeah, maybe do we want to mention that other name, or we got too big of an audience to mention that?
We did. We said here and there.
No, but there's another area. I could say the number.
Well, that's up to you then.
You don't want to say it.
We aren't.
Yeah, we're not going to say that. We got too big. You're too successful, Ed, for that little fact.
That's right. We have to be careful, Ed. We want to keep them rectally probing you to a minimum.
Okay, it looks like the next topic is going to go into the history of state-issued debt-free money. So let's see where this leads.
Give me some examples for our listeners of where this has manifested itself in history. Names, I'm guessing that you're saying it's basically in every culture.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of them would be the currency, National Currency Act, shortly after the Civil War. I believe it was shortly after. It may have been toward the very end of the Civil War when, of course, President Lincoln was issuing debt-free money, the greenbacks, in order to fund the Northern effort during the Civil War. That would be one famous example. The other example I would point to where state-issued money has been instituted would be Nazi Germany. But prior to that, I'd point out that hyperinflation that the Weimar Republic experienced, it was not the German government that was hyperinflating its currency, because, again, the Reichsbank was essentially a private bank. So it was basically hyperinflating its own currency and crashing the German economy to boot. So there's any number of examples. The other example I'd point out that we've had this conflict between state-issued money and then a private monopoly-issued money goes back to pre-Revolutionary War period in this country, when most of the colonies were issuing their own colonial money, colonial scrip, and doing so more or less debt-free. And that accounted for the full employment that we had for a certain period of time before the Revolutionary War. It accounted for the colonial prosperity. And, of course, the Bank of England stepped in and forced Parliament to pass certain laws and shut that activity down. And, of course, the effect was instant. It crashed many colonial economies and eventually contributed a significant cause to the Revolutionary War. So, you know, those are just but a few examples.
And are we talking about something, is it fair to characterize this as some sort of an international cabal or cabals plural?
I think so. And the reason why is, and it's a very interesting question, because when you go back into ancient history and see the activity of these early versions of international bankers, I like to call them bullion brokers. It's not actually my term, it's another researcher's term. But when you see their activity, the most interesting thing that you see is a kind of a coordinated policy between the Orient and the Occident, namely India and China on the one hand and the Roman Empire and some of these other ancient civilizations in the Occident on the other. Because you find Rome, for example, artificially making gold the bullion of choice vis-a-vis other bullions. But when you go to the Orient, you find the exact opposite policy. You find them making silver the most valued bullion. So what this does, in effect, is it enhances the power of these bullion brokers to trade between the Orient and the Occident back and forth. And the most interesting example of that to me, George, is there is a famous set of mines in ancient Egypt back in those times called the Bishari Mines. And there's a classical Roman author by the name of Diodorus Siculus that even comments on these mines. Well, this is where, of course, the pharaohs would sentence people to work the gold mines of Bishari. But the most interesting thing, George, is that the people there were guarded by an international contingent of mercenaries and of several languages. So, in other words, the whole operation really requires some sort of international coordination even to be able to get that kind of operation in place. So you've got these two things, I think, that argue for an existence of this international class from very, very ancient times.
Do you know about the Dishari? I'm not sure what he's saying. The Dishari mines, Ion?
Just a mine where they got a lot of bullion.
Sumer state-issued debt-free money. Ed, is he for debt-free money?
Yes, he is. Money?
Right, so he wants government to take over the money system.
Well, he feels that with the debt-free money that it is then pegged to the gross domestic product, and you wouldn't have more money than is.
But it already is that way, and they let it go. So that's like saying, okay, we passed the law, and this is the law. So now we're going to make a law saying that you have to keep that law. Well, if they ain't going to keep the law that they've already made, what's the point of the law? That's already the way it's supposed to be. You can't print money just indiscriminately. You'll blow yourself out of the business fast. Well, that's the law. Well, they're not doing it. So it's not about redoing anything. It's about enforcing the law that you've already passed and said this is the way we're going to do business. This debt-free money doesn't make any sense because you're balancing your gross domestic product, your gross national product. That's what you're going to make. So if money's based on what you've made, then that'd be debt-free money. But the only reason you keep track of it is you keep it in balance is because it's a debt against what you're going to make. So even that doesn't hold water based on his formulary. It would have to be your next year's crop is based on what you produced last year. That doesn't work. It's a constant balancing. So even this debt-free money is still based on debt of stuff that you haven't produced yet.
Mm.
So even that fiduciary, however high-minded, dichotomy doesn't work either.
Right, but you were how does that relate to the question about the international mercantile class that surfaces with the printing press 1600 and 1700?
You're gauging on the come. We talked about that on the casino money.
Right, but
that would be like saying make the odds pay out on the casino based on what the last person won. And if more people won, you get a lesser payout to keep it balanced. Well, that's not debt-free money. That's just moving the odds so that you stay ahead.
What does Ion say about groups that are against usury?
We say good luck.
Right, but no, it's interesting. Usury was a natural byproduct beginning in Aristotle's time of the speed up of transactions. It was a side effect that spun in there. In that sense, you can't
stop
it.
Supply and demand, they call it capitalism, Bob.
What was it on May 6th? No, May 6th you had the 1,000 point or so drop, and it was they pulled the plug. And did they pull the plug in the last 3 weeks again?
They couldn't.
They did on May 6th, right?
Right, but after that they couldn't because it didn't go. It went so fast. It was before. It happened in 20 minutes.
Was that May 6th?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're saying there's been an attempt since then?
Oh, yeah, it's gone up and down. Now it's bounced back up a little bit because everybody was betting short. Now it's gone long. So it'll go up and down. What we talked about years ago, Bob, with dead cats bouncing.
Right. Okay, so you're saying that the attempt to control it on May 6th didn't work.
Because it happened too fast. They didn't have time.
And it's now happening in June and July. It's happening even faster. They can't even begin to think about stopping it.
Exactly.
So that was the last attempt at a media a financial ecology of controlling the collapse was May 6th. And then they had to blame the guy who misspelled billion. the new David Lee. I don't know if this will be relevant, but we'll try this last tape here.
Well, basically, George, my theme in the book has been to try and show that there has been a consistent pattern exhibited by what we would call the international bankers, or I like to call them banksters, because I think they're in kind of a racketeering business. But
okay, Ian, do you deny that there were international bankers the last 150 years?
No, Bob.
Do you see them having inordinate control over social events in countries over the last 100 years?
No, Bob.
What role did they play?
They were bean counters.
Bean counters, and that's all. So what would you say had more influence than the bankers?
The depositors. Let me tell you, here's the validation. If what we just said wasn't the case, why in the name of you, Bob, would they run around every time you turn around with a G7 and a G8 and a G20, and we're going to call the IMF, and we're going to have a G7 on the IMF and a G20 to figure out how we're going to balance what the Central Bank of Nigeria didn't do this week, and how we're going to deal with Turkey, and what's going on with Greece, and on and on and on and on and on. If they were that damn powerful, why didn't they control it?
Okay.
The basic premise is that there are two different ways to approach physics and finance. And the first way is to approach them as closed systems. In other words, systems based on scarce energy, scarce resources, and therefore scarce money. And then the second system is to approach both systems as open systems where energy is in abundant supply if you just know how to tap into it, and where money in turn reflects this by being the creation of the state and therefore a debt-free instrument of exchange. So I'm attempting to tie those two basic concepts together and then to show kind of a consistent pattern of activity on the fact of these banksters doing certain things in modern times, and then I use that as kind of a template to go back and look at ancient times and see pretty much the same activity. So
your basic contention is that what's unfolded now is not an aberration, that it's the result of centuries of activity by the same players, basically.
Yes, essentially that's correct.
All right, well, help me understand the link to alchemy.
Well, alchemy, that's an excellent question. Alchemy is, of course, the science of, or pseudoscience, depending upon one's lights, of transmuting base metals into gold. But the further you dig back into alchemical texts, the more apparent it becomes that what they're really talking about is a physics of the physics of the physical medium, in other words, of space-time. And it's that medium itself that creates information. It creates everything that exists and transmutes itself, essentially. So alchemy, viewed in that sense, from that physics approach, is kind of a transmutational physics. Now, the tie-in with finance is that money, if you look at it, the two philosophies of money, if you look at it, it is a kind of an alchemy in itself. You're taking something and transmuting it into a medium of exchange and then using it to buy goods and services. And there's two kinds, as far as I'm concerned, there's two kinds of alchemy that are in evidence. One, of course, is the system that we've been living under, where you have a private banking monopoly issuing monetized debt. In other words, the money always carries an interest-bearing load on it. And so it's always going to be money that's in shorter supply than the demands of the economic system that it's in. The other kind is kind of a true alchemy, where you're basing it on the productive output of a given state, and that ties very directly into the physics of the zero-point energy, where you're dealing with an energy that's constantly productive. So, again, you know, we're back to those that basic idea that we're dealing with two different kinds of systems, a closed system physics and a closed system financial system, and an open system physics and an open system financial system.
I have a question.
Yes.
Do we ever sound like that?
No.
Okay, good. We want to make sure that non-physical doesn't fall off the physical wagon completely. Okay. We were listening and we were embracing and we were waiting on a punchline and trying to get somewhere and working out some dynamics. And we were going to do the meme as the message, and then we were going to have monetized debt. Isn't that an oxymoron?
Yes.
Well, and if you're making that be the strata of your point of an open system and a closed system, and you're still monetizing debt, doesn't that undo it even if you're opened or closed-minded?
Yep.
And you're chit-chatting about bringing it all back around and cleaning it all up if you can figure out what the difference between alchemy. Now, of course, we have a deference. We've done great voluminous work on alchemy and what you know alchemy to mean by your own definition and your own lexicographer's version is more than turning lead into gold.
Mm.
But, I mean, you know, we'll answer it the way he would say it. If that is the case, and if the message is open, and when the open-closed is open-closed, and why the open-closed opened, and if the open is the closed, then it was the Jews' fault, it was the German Jews' fault. And then this is all get cleaned up if you'll just go ahead and get rid of the Jews. You got it all whooped. Now, if that's not exactly what he's saying, but if you start doing an ipso facto, that'll become the conclusion in a little bit.
Yeah. So he's talking about an open system in relation to a closed system. That's limiting to compare your open to that. It's your you're arguing for your limitations and then trying to create a solution within the limitations.
No, we'll even get better than that. What does that mean? What does an open system and a closed system that he's referring to even mean?
It would mean you were not anything.
Oh,
you were not.
Well, then there shouldn't be that much discussion regarding it. If at the end of the day, either way, you're not anything. Well, if you're not anything, then there shouldn't be too much high-minded conversation to work out for the details of how it's not going to work. So if you've decided that it's not going to work, then you've got the answer. So you might as well go to the beach and tweet while you're there.
Okay, we're almost finished.
Take us back to the beginning, as far sure. back as you can go, that sort of ties into what we see happening now.
Well,
how far back?
That's a loaded question, and it
well,
really
of course it is.
Yeah, it really opens up the Pandora's box. If you go back all the way back to ancient Sumer and Akkad and the Mesopotamian region, the very earliest form of money was, of course, state-issued money. In other words, it was issued debt-free, and essentially what they used as money were nothing but cuneiform tablets, little clay tablets, that were basically orders on the surpluses of the state warehouse. In other words, if we were to put it into modern terms, it would be a note or a paper note that would be circulated against the gross domestic product of the United States.
Ayan, would you agree that that was the earliest form of money, these cuneiform tablets, or were you projecting in a limited idea of money?
It's limited.
What would be an example of money that wasn't cuneiform tablets? In culture.
Chickens.
Well, it's barter.
Well, that's what it was, Bob.
So money is barter.
No. That's what they used in the early days.
Chickens was a form of standard currency?
Absolutely. And eggs and beads and whatever else you had.
Right. So that's not barter. barter is just exchanging without a standard of exchange, right?
Right,
just,
right. But it was pretty clear that the set standard, you know, if you got a haircut in those days, you gave them a chicken. So that's a standard rate of exchange and is as valid as your state-backed debt, or no, debt-free debt. Yeah, that's what it is. State debt-free debt. That's what it is. Now we got it. Oh, Ed, we figured it out now. Now we can engage. We got it right. State-issued debt-free debt. Okay. Now, very good. And so the Hebrews used it, and the Samaritans used it, and the Ottoman Empire did it, and then Moabites did it, and Chinese did it. They've been doing it a long time. Indians did it. The Ikes, all the Ikes did it. The Ans did it. The Eases, all the Eases did it. All of them did it. Yeah, they all did. So yeah.
They all did the chicken standard.
No, they all did the state-backed debt-free debt.
The chicken.
Mm-hmm.
That's the definition of the chicken.
Got it.
So
we were trying to apply it to your topic because we didn't want to rule the show there, Bob.
Right. Well, what is the limitation or the false premise that this person is propagating that interferes with a clear understanding of how trade happens?
Well, they're not saying anything, so it was not easy. You can't confuse this, Bob. They're not saying anything.
Oh, okay.
What are you getting? There's not even a question because they hadn't said anything to even rebuke.
Well, he's saying there's two kinds of alchemy, two kinds of money, open and closed. He's trying to say something.
Yeah, open and closed. It's state-backed debt-free debt.
Okay, you were almost finished here.
Now, over time, what happened was the issuing authority in those ancient cultures ultimately became entangled with the temple. In other words, it was religion that sort of gave money its sanctity and its probity.
Do you agree that that chicken economy got entangled with the temple?
If there was a play, it was the difference between power and authority, nothing to do with it. It wasn't the chicken's fault.
All right, so did the pharaohs not engage the authority projected on them?
No, nope.
Pharaohs of Egypt.
They were gods, and they'd tell you quick, and they'd smoke you if you crossed up with them.
And so the ones that required authority would say, well, that's pretty authoritative.
Exactly. That's good.
Okay.
Play it on.
Religion that sort of gave money its sanctity and its probity. And one of the things that begins to happen is as these various cultures trade with each other, is you see the rise of an international mercantile class that then begins to specialize in bullion, in the issuance of bullion.
All right, so he's mixing up people who take their power and are able to move around the planet and appear to be international bankers, mixing up with those other bankers who might have, in an inferior level, projected international banking for authority.
The ones that are trading in soup
are the ones who are trying to be authoritative.
Right.
Yeah.
So the bullion. But you know, it's very interesting. He didn't just be specific when he's talking about the bullion traders. He didn't say, was it beef bullion or chicken bullion? It was clear which bullion it was. So that leaves a great deal of subjugation into the topical response, doesn't it?
Yes.
And what they do is they ally themselves with the temple. In other words, they get the probity of the temple and of religion.
Yeah, that's what's interesting. We look at people like King Henry VIII, Hitler, the pharaohs, and we think that they are great authoritative figures, fascist, terrorists, communists, extreme imposing personalities. And that misses a whole dynamic of history where these authoritative figures are actually parallel worlders and only dropping in occasionally and have taken their power and are all over the place. And they aren't. And yet, you know, so we mix up. We think all the emperors like that. Well, some emperors were cool parallel worlders and others weren't. Would you say that?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so that's the fine distinction you're bringing to this course, this discussion.
Good. We're glad there was one point that it was of value.
Yeah. Here we go.
And then they begin to, quite frankly, to counterfeit the state-issued notes, because it's the temples that have control over the minting back then. So they begin to counterfeit through the temple and issue state-issued notes that are really beyond the authority or the authorization of the state, and they collapse the currency. And then they step in and say, well, why don't we use bullion as a basis or a medium of exchange? And that will be able to better handle international traffic. But, of course, they're the ones that control the bullion trade. So in essence, what you get down to is you get down to the circulation of an interest-bearing note, because they control the bullion trade, and they gradually substitute that kind of monetized debt for the circulating issues of the state, and eventually they take those issues out of circulation. So again, if you want to draw the modern parallel, you can go back and think of President Kennedy and his issuance of those United States notes. I remember as a kid even spending some of those.
Or maybe even more direct is the Wall Street bankers who are bundling together mortgages, debt, in essence, and selling debt as a product.
Yes, exactly so, exactly so. Well, that's all the Federal Reserve note is. It's just simply monetized debt.
Ion, do you have a problem that with the fact that Wall Street sold debt in the last 30 years?
Bob, that's not the last 30 years. That's all they've ever sold. The reason that you sell stock in your company is to raise money. It's you're giving away ownership in the form of a debt.
So that, and that created the great wealth we have in our late 20th century, early 21st century. It's not to call it debt is not accurate. It's just static exchange.
Unless it's state-backed debt, free debt, then that's significant, I guess.
Okay. So the authoritative, the ones looking for authority, make a big issue out of debt. The ones who take their power celebrate the non-debt disguised as debt.
Yeah, they don't notice.
Because, of course, you know, the basic lesson that people have to learn is that any bank, including the Federal Reserve, can never issue interest. They can only lend money into circulation.
I guess that's the corrected view of it. He has an issue with, has a problem with issuing interest.
Well, he adds the Federal Reserve, any bank, and the Federal Reserve, like they're a separate branch of a bank.
Hmm.
But for a bank to lend money into circulation, that it's really the human creator is creating the note that's creating the money rather than the bank is lending the money. There's no money to lend unless the human creator creates it.
That's exactly correct. So it's a cheeky way to say the sky is blue, and so there could never be a sky other than a blue sky unless the human creator changes it.
That's what he's saying? You say his way is a cheeky way, or its way?
Yeah, does that make any sense? No one would deposit money in the bank to save it if you weren't getting interest. Oh, wait, there's no interest now, and then nobody has any money, so it doesn't make any difference. So, see, so if there is high interest, then that's because there's inflation. So you're better off to spend your money into something that's tangible, like chickens. See, Ed, you've had trouble with all them chickens, and that was the answer all along.
Use them for currency.
Use them for currency, that's correct. Hey, it'll work in your bullion trade, because you won't have to go to the bullion sellers. If you got your own chicken, you can make your own bullion.
And any time money is lent, it, of course, carries interest. So there's never enough money in circulation to pay the interest on the principal.
You agree with that? Never enough money in circulation to pay the interest on the principal?
Well, Bob, that's just not even logical. He just got through saying that it was supposed to be based on the GMP. Well, if the GMP... he's saying GDP, which is not correct, but it's the gross national product. If the gross national product is increased, then it most absolutely would be part of the whole fiduciary M1, because the increase of the lent money is the increase that these banks are banking on to make an increase to overlend and stimulate the flow of money that is. So the rule is that they put a dollar in the bank, they used to could lend 10. Now they could lend 100. Now they don't. Nobody's borrowing or lending or putting or doing any of them anymore. They're all just sort of pissing in the wind.
With what?
Typing. Nothing. Typing.
Yeah. Okay.
A state, on the other hand, can not only lend money into circulation, but it can issue money. So when it issues money, it issues it debt-free. Well, you know, I remember spending those Kennedy United States notes with the red seal on them as a kid. But what the Federal Reserve did is anytime it received those notes in its transactions, it simply took them out of circulation. And this is, again, this is a very, very old ploy that the banksters have used going back millennia.
You see, that is that true, Ian? You see the banksters take the state-backed money and take it out of circulation? Is that the battle?
That's what they did with Mercury dimes. That's the way they pull the gold out of circulation. That's how they pulled. That's what they do. Is in their process, they don't say a thing. Where did all this money? They changed all the U.S. money and made it monopoly money, colored money. Or did they say, put a sign up and say, okay, you've got until day after yesterday to bring your old money for the new money? No, they just collected the old money up and put in new. Took in the old money and put in new. Basically just replaced it. Ground the other money up. They, in their process of their central clearinghouse, they don't, sometimes there was $2 bills everywhere. Then all of a sudden you couldn't find a $2 bill. They were just collecting them up out of circulation. That's all.
So issuing money is different than lending money.
Well,
the government did it.
There's one is loaning it to somebody, and the other one's printing it yourself.
That'd be like
loaning somebody a chicken, and issuing them a chicken.
Okay, so you don't find much significance in that distinction.
Well, there's not a distinction because it doesn't make sense either way you go at it.
Okay, that's chickens, but you can lend money.
Oh, he says you can't.
No, he says the banksters lend the money, whereas governments, the nice government,
but he just got through saying that there's no money to pay the interest because the amount you loaned is all the money that is, so there's no way for increase, so you'll never be able to pay the interest, so why would you borrow money? Or I guess it's a good business to borrow a bunch of money because there'll never be money to pay the interest back.
You would not engage what he's talking about because it just gets you thinking backwards, thinking off on a side issue that's not relevant.
What do you
suggest about the absence of money today?
Lady Gaga, that'll do. Vesta Goodman, that'll do.
Do you mean as a consumer of them or imitate their actions?
Well, either loan Vesta Goodman or trade Vesta Goodman or swap Vestal Goodman for a chicken or bouillon. Yeah, that's right.
I don't think that works because we have so much entertainment. Why specialize in one thing? And then, see, there's an example. You got set up on my question. You came up with a specialist little dinky answer, whereas there's no way to measure the wealth that we all experience in every day considering the amount of information and entertainment we engage. All the variety.
So the answer to that then is let's get us some state-backed debt-free debt. Then you got the same answer. So maybe, Bob, this is the enlightening point of the millennia. This speaker is agreeing with you. So you set us up great because we're like, whoopee. Does that mean we can go to the beach now?
Yeah, what I'm saying is that I said the reform, they want to reform politics, education, law, medicine, all these old specialists.
Oh, yes. We're going to get some of that reform party. That's right.
Right. And that's going to happen in a month or two. No, well, no, it's 5 months. In November, going to be a big reform tea party explosion. But I'm saying that the medium that connects all those is money. And there's no money, so there's no way to carry on the education, legal services, garbage pickup, entertainment, Well, you can do it with the entertainment. That's easy. You got electricity.
Yeah,
it's free. It's free. Electricity is free. So he said you can't measure it in terms of money. People are trying to figure out how to work, how to have a sense of moving forward or achievement or survival without the and you take your power by realizing you don't have to eat, sleep, or be married. You can have it all at any time you want.
No. Taking your power. Then listen to what you just said. So you take your power by knowing that you don't have to eat, sleep, or do anything. Well, if you have power, you can have whatever food you want. If you have power, they'll bring it to you. If you have power, you can have whatever it is that you want to exchange for whatever it is you want. You can
well,
get
that's absurd.
Want.
That's absurd. I don't see anybody. Nobody knows how to implement that. I don't see any. You know, I know several people lost their jobs this week. They're running around trying to find another job. Okay, you say take your own power. Have other people send you money. Now, how do you apply to get in line for that? Now, you have all kinds of 3-2-1 techniques and that, but how could you actually get these people to do it?
Get them to do what? Get money sent to them or come into their place of power?
Yeah, the physical translation of coming into their place of power.
Oh, okay. The words of their mouth will do it. That's how most of them had a job and they were starving to death, working themselves to death. Anyway.
Yeah. But it gave them some money that they could buy food with, make exchanges. Now they can't eat. Now they don't have the money. It's going to run out pretty soon. That's a pretty frightening experience. And you're telling them to take their power? How do they take it? Where do they take it?
The same way. Take their power, Bob, is not get it confused with authority. Know that everything in your world you created. And basically, if they were to ask us, we'd say, honey, you was looking for a job when you found that one. So, to locate or bilocate you another position is absolutely up to you. Or you can take a double-barrel butcher knife and blow your damn brains out. That's
okay, you don't have to leap to that point. They're not going to do that. How can these people whose municipal services are going down in California, how can they take their power? Just realize your words, so you just sit around saying, yeah, money flows freely and easy, and you wait to see if any checks show up?
Well, if you're waiting till a check shows
up... Yeah, it won't work.
Because you're waiting. The word
yeah, that doesn't
tell.
Work. So you actually just declare yourself having... I've declared my throneship. I have my power. Now, please, buddy, could you spare a dime? You see, do they disconnect
the queen,
from those?
Okay, that's simple. If that were the case, you'd see in through contrast. If nobody's trash is being picked up and you don't have a job, you could make serious folding cash by going and saying, I will gladly pick up your trash for you if you'll give me the money you weren't giving to your municipality. I'll get your trash picked up. Oh, you don't have any money? Okay, that's a beautiful flower. I'd like that. Or that's beautiful jewelry, Bob's. I'll take that. Or that's beautiful chickens. Law, you got chickens. And Ed says, oh, would you like a chicken? Yes. I've got lots of chickens.
Okay, what I get from that, fine. What I get from that, Ian, is, just wake up in the morning, walk out in the street, and look for opportunities to engage with people.
And they'll find you. If you're looking for the opportunities, they will find you.
Yeah,
that's how opportunity works.
Yeah, don't assume anything about yourself. Just walk out and see where you can assist or actually help or maybe have something that someone likes. So it's
if you require action to be proportionate to your survival, there are some who don't require action to be part of their survival. I mean, you're the poster child for that, Bob.
Yeah, but I'm a big secret. I'm a big secret. Let's not bring me into it.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. So everybody, if you Bob's asking the question, if you get tangled up and how to come into your power and how things drop in your lap and you don't have to turn your damn hands to do nothing, then we say call Bob and he'll explain it to you. That's how you do it, Bob.
Well, I don't want to. I'm trying to. Looking for other models. They're looking for other models.
Then you should start using if and what about and sort of like and kind of maybe or sort of like kind of maybe or mostly some of the time or.
I am well known. If you happen to catch my shows in the last 25 years, I did say be like me.
There you go. And hey, like Bob, me. If you run out of money checks, you can always sell them your chart.
Okay. The thing is that it doesn't seem to appeal to people to be like me.
Well,
so I'm sort of saying, okay.
That's good. And so if they're not going to listen to you, then they certainly ought to be able to figure it out for themselves. And if they figure it out for themselves, then they will have come to their place of power. And that's why we say all day, every day, that all this wibbly wibbly gibbly bibbly 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 Bob is tomfoolery. If you like our words, great. If you don't like our words, great. It's all right with us because we're so busy pleasing and delighting ourselves, we don't even notice when you're bitching and complaining of how this marvelous, superfluous power that we're offering freely that you already have but you won't connect. That'd be like getting mad at the power company because you got electricity and don't have anything plugged in. We'd say, you cluck, it's your business. If you don't turn no lights on, you've got electricity. You got the stuff. You got everything already
right there.
And I can't turn my lights on. I don't have any light bulbs. My toaster won't toast because I don't have it plugged in. And we go, well, plug it in. Well, now that's action, and I don't know if I'm worthy to have toast made for me. And I don't have any bread to put in the toaster. So see, I lost my job, and I'm going to starve to death. Now, how do I come into my power? You come into your power by plugging it in. Turn it on. Get the benefit of it. And if you can't do that, you're pretty much well screwed anyway. So hang on, honey. It'll be over soon. You needn't worry about it.
Yeah, but those are kind of general. I'm seeing what I get from what you're saying is go down. You know, maybe you can't afford your car, so walk out in the street, start interacting with people, and don't let anybody say, well, we're Americans or this or that, and define it and say, no, let's create something with our words. Let's create something. Don't say what we are. That's authoritative. Let's just start creating with our words and ignore anybody who says some kind of authoritative dictate.
Isn't that how it's been working already anyway?
Yes, behind the scenes, in a sense, because everybody gets lip.
No.
Everybody gets lip service.
No.
Everybody gets lip service to the authority.
You can't afford your car. Well, it's not your car if you can't afford it.
No, but they let you. If you give lip service to the authorities, you say yes, I'll pay my money back or something, or I'll promise to pay it.
Then you're paying them. You're paying them usury, and your little man done said you can't do that. Because there ain't enough money to pay back the usury. So it's actually what you do is you call the man and say, come get this damn car that belongs to you. Because there ain't no money to pay back the usury for the rent on the car that I'm not going to be able to afford to pay. And then guess what? You don't have to bitch about not affording your car anymore, and that word will come out of the occasion. Then what you can do is you can catch a ride with the man that come and got your car because he can't afford it either because they ain't no money to pay for the increase for this contract that got dumped that group at Sally Mae that's fixing to fall. So there won't be any room for that either. So then it'll come back to the old-timey way where you can let the words of your mouth and the meditations of your heart be acceptable in your own sight and get happy. And when you get happy, opportunity finds you. You'll find your way walking to the dump because you can't afford your car. And while you're walking, you can take somebody's trash and they'll give you a chicken. And now you don't have to have a car to go buy the chicken because you got a chicken. Then you're in the bouillon business. Boil that chicken up good and you can sell bouillon. That's where the money is in bouillon. So start doing chicken bouillon, vegetable. Ed, they got vegetable bouillon. You can go the vegan way and make organic vegetable bouillon. It's great. And you got to have it anyway to survive. They'll make a little extra, and then they can share that with you. And in exchange for that, they can pay for your IP provider so you can tweet and twat and have all them apps for all this other stuff that you can no longer afford to do because the words of your mouth have put you in such a maze that you can't see which end is up. And then you're sitting here arguing for your limitations and then asking us that nobody can do it. Well, then you're screwed. If nobody can do it, then check out, baby. It's over. But if they can and they do and they are, then be easy with it and go with that. Find anything that feels a little better than what it did. Doesn't have to be the best thought you've ever thought in your life, but it certainly is better than instigating and engaging this gobbledygook that confounds and words that can't make no sense out of nothing and can't get nowhere, everything. Forget all the words. Get happy. And when you get happy, that's the essence of creation.
Well, how would you get happy? By going out and interacting with whatever befalls you.
Well, that's what you're doing now.
No, no. You say we're doing that now. But what's interesting is people use words without knowing they create things. They have this whole patina surface activity of words they're allegiant to to deny that they're actually doing what you're saying we continue doing.
Exactly. Then for either figure it out or it's over. And either way, the pay is the same. You needn't worry about it either way.